Hi, this is Debbie Weil. I welcome you to another interview on the topic of writing, designing, publishing, or marketing a short ebook.
Hello, everyone. This is Debbie Weil with Voxie Media and Beta Author Boost. And our guest today is award-winning and best-selling author Pamela Slim. And Pam is the author of a wonderful book called Escape from Cubicle Nation, From Corporate Prisoner to Thriving Entrepreneur. I love that title. Published by Penguin Portfolio. And this, it really is a marvelous book. It's both solid and also highly engaging. It's so fun to read. And it tells you how to go from crazy dreams to viable business ideas. Ideas that align with your passion. Pam is also a business coach and a professional speaker who helps people navigate the new world of work. And I want to say she's so much more because she just does a lot of stuff. She's also a longtime blogger, and her blog by the same name, I guess the book actually has the same name as the blog, so her blog is Escape from Cubicle Nation, is one of the top career and marketing blogs. And full disclosure, she's also a mentor and a friend. And Pam is currently writing her second book, which is called, I don't know if this is the final title, but it's called Body of Work, and it'll be published in the fall of 2013, also by Penguin Portfolio. Welcome, Pam.
Thanks for having me, Debbie. I am totally delighted to be here.
Well, this is so fun, and I think just so interesting to get a glimpse into your writing process as you are, as I understand it, actually writing your second book now for the next couple of months. Is that right?
I am. You're right. And you're right in that it's a working title right now. So the working title we use for the proposal stage is Body of Work. But I think we're going to come up with something a bit more zingy and descriptive. Certainly the core idea from the book is Body of Work. But choosing a title is one of those fun, occasionally excruciating things, which I'm sure you also talk about with your beta authors. The right title makes a big difference to a book.
Absolutely, we do, and it's hard to explain actually how it just takes time in a way to keep thinking of ideas and then have one finally say, oh, that's the right one. But talk for a minute about, and I'm going to call it Body of Work, I actually like that title, Body of Work, and how it relates to everything you're doing in your business, and I'm going to call you as a content marketer. And so when did you realize that Body of Work was the topic of your next book?
Yeah, it's a good question because I find that I have an integrated approach to how it is that I view my life and my work, the work that I do with clients, the writing that I do in some cases to be attracting new clients. And for me, it's personally because I have always really had a deep passion about the work that I was doing. And you know this, Debbie, but for those who I haven't met before, I've been self-employed for 16 years. The first, last real job that I had was at Barclays Global Investors in San Francisco. I was a director of training and development. And I quit that job and started consulting and working inside companies for about 10 years and on the human side of business. So doing executive development and change management and teaching people how to manage employees, doing employee communications, really anything that related to the human side of business. And I worked in all kinds of different companies. I started in high tech because I was based in the Bay Area, worked a lot in Silicon Valley and places like Hewlett-Packard and Cisco, and then expanded into a lot of different kinds of companies. And it was really an adventure. And it was a process of research, even though at that time I didn't realize that it was research, of just getting exposure to so many different work environments and seeing on the inside. Because I was working on the human side of business, I often got the behind-the-scenes story of sometimes places that were written up in the press as being the best places to work, or that maybe everybody thought everything was great if you worked at a certain company. But then when I got inside, I realized that it was a much more complex situation that was happening there, and sometimes things were better than was being projected, and sometimes things were a lot worse. And so that experience of doing consulting is really what led me to want to begin to work with people who were interested in leaving to start a business, because I did work for myself when I would be doing meetings or engagements. Often there were a small percentage of people who would pull me aside and really ask me about how it is that I did it, how I went from a corporate job into entrepreneurship. So that seed really planted the idea of at first just starting my blog, Escape from Cubicle Nation, in which I could be sharing ideas and information and perspectives based on the work that I had done working in corporations. And one of the things I think that helps me to do the work that I do and help the articles on the blog is because I did understand so deeply what the real situation was for people that were employees. And I think I love to have a huge variety of different perspectives on writing for many different people. Sometimes I found personally that somebody who had been a serial entrepreneur, who had never really had a corporate job, maybe whose parents came from an entrepreneurial background, really couldn't understand deeply what kind of shift it was for people that were looking to leave a corporate environment. So that whole piece of my body of work that has been related to Escape from Cubicle Nation was really addressing the needs and the interests that I had had while I was actually working. And then it really leads to the next book and where I am now, because now after having worked with entrepreneurs for the last 7 years in a very hands-on way of working with individuals and teaching classes and writing about this whole entrepreneurial environment, I noticed that there was really a split in the way that we viewed the world. And in some ways, that which we would criticize in corporate life for things being so black and white, or for, you know, feeling like what I described as mafia culture, where you either work for the company or you're, you know, totally ejected, that same kind of mentality can seep into entrepreneurial life, where people would think the only way to work was working for yourself and the only way to be free was working for yourself. Well, work with a few thousand people who are doing the real journey of entrepreneurship. You know this, Debbie. It is not always a trip to the ballet. It is hard. It is really challenging personally, emotionally, intellectually, in all ways. And so I don't think in this new world of work that everybody working for themselves is a solution to everything. What I think what we need is a framework and an understanding about, first, what is this new world of work? What opportunities do we have today that we didn't have before? A lot, I think, with the rise of the internet and flexibility and working options, people doing things on the side, people teaching virtually and working virtually, but also the reality that we know, which is that things are simply, I think, always going to be less stable than they have been in the past. No job is guaranteed in any kind of work configuration. So given that, I'm exploring in my book what are the specific skills and competencies that people need to have in order to thrive in this new world of work. And what I'm seeing a lot with clients is that some people might choose to be in a entrepreneurial situation for a while and run their own business. Then they might want to go back and join a company, or maybe they might want to start a nonprofit or go back to school and end up working for a university. So people will be moving between different environments, and my intention for the book is to provide the kind of tools and motivation so that they can do that really successfully, and maybe to bridge some of this gap that we have between the extreme thinking of corporate is bad and entrepreneurship is good, you know, the light and the dark side of the force. I think our world of work is a lot more complex than that, and that kind of thinking is really going to jeopardize more people than it helps.
Oh, I love how you explained that, and actually now I understand much more really kind of what the core of your new book is. But let me ask you this, because I know that those listening may be wondering, because it seems like you already have a very, very full plate with your coaching and your speaking and teaching courses. And so how does a book, writing another book, fit into your overall business strategy? Because, you know, writing a book is hugely time-consuming. It's very challenging. What do you expect the ROI to be for your book? And do you try to quantify it in advance, or is it just you have this burning desire to write another book? But I'm figuring you've thought about this in a methodical way.
I have thought about it in a methodical way. For me, it's actually an easy way I look at my work really within the context of the definition of body of work, which is the other central idea for the book. I think the purpose of our life is to create a body of work that we're really proud of throughout the course of our life. So as you're thinking about your last day, hopefully many years from now, when you're looking back over what it is that you've done, what are the very specific things that you have created throughout the course of your life? And they can be concrete things like a book or like products or software code, or maybe you've built an organization. It's also about the quality of relationships that you've developed. Maybe you've been a very engaged community member. You've been an engaged parent or grandparent. So everything about the way that you interact with the world, everything that you create, everything that you impact with your life is related to your body of work. And it's not just work-related. It also has to do with what people do on a volunteer side or on the personal side. So from that perspective, I often, through the work that I do, I'm fascinated by it in working with people. And when I see repeated questions and concerns that people have, you know, about an area, or I watch the news and I read what people are saying about the new economic environment and hear that a lot of people are stressed out, I sometimes find myself yelling at the television, like, you know, you don't get it. It's not all bad. Let's not keep telling the new graduates that everything is horrible and it's a terrible time to graduate. It's not a terrible time to graduate. It's a great time. And so as I'm shaking my fist and wanting to get these ideas out there, part of what I like to do is to encapsulate the ideas in something like a book, because the neat thing about a book is it is a very concrete piece of history and piece of legacy. And I may be old school about this, but as much as I love everything about the new ways of publishing and think that in certain cases self-publishing can be a fantastic way of getting your work out there, there's something about, for me personally, being connected to a traditional New York publisher that still makes me happy and has some meaning, knowing that it's going to be, my book is going to be sitting with other really amazing books that have been created. And that makes me feel good thinking about that. My publisher portfolio is headed up by Adrian Zackheim, who is the one who edited Jim Collins' book, Good to Great. And I remember when I was first researching publishers, I got so excited about that because that book really had an impact in my life in so many ways, both hearing Jim speak personally, which I will never forget that happened here in Phoenix right before that book came out, and then also really just exploring the ideas in the book, which really had an impact on me in terms of how I do my work. And there have been other books like that. Martha Beck's book, Finding Your Own North Star, was another one that really impacted my desire to become a coach and to have a framework in which I could work with people. So there's something for me personally that's just a very personal connection with really wanting to create something that does have a legacy that can help a lot of people out there. And I am miserable without a deadline. Forget about it. I won't get anything done unless there's somebody breathing down my neck and saying this needs to happen. Maybe besides watching episodes of Law and Order or hanging out on Facebook. You know, I tend to do that really well. But anything else, I need to really have a concrete deadline. So what it does in the context of my bigger business perspective is that when I write a book, the book is really the framework and the anchor for all this next piece of the body of work that I will be doing. So as I'm writing about very concrete things, like some of these skills that people need for the new world of work, one example, I just wrote a blog post today, which is related to a theme in the book, which is about the stories that you tell, the two stories you tell. What story do you tell yourself about your capability to move forward and achieve your goals? And then what story do you specifically tell people who you're trying to influence, customers who you're trying to get, you know, jobs you're trying to get, et cetera. And so as I think about some of those elements in the book, those most likely are going to turn into keynote talks. Those are going to turn into workshops. And it's really easy and effective and a really great business decision to make to have a book to be anchoring these activities. Whether we like it or not, people think you're a little bit more credible and smarter when you write a book. It's actually not true. They're really, really smart people who have never written a book. But it's one of those things that for whatever reason we all collectively tend to believe. So because that's the case, why not really ride with that? And so when I have done the analysis about why I would write a book, I am much less concerned about getting a huge advance or, you know, it was fine and very reasonable and, you know, good advance that I got with my publisher, but I wasn't looking to squeeze every last cent of it. I'm not concerned. Some people would say, you know, but you don't really make as much money per book as if you were to do it from a self-publishing perspective. I look at it more from the keynote speaking perspective, where having a, you know, top New York business publisher means a lot to people who might be hiring me to speak, much more than the amount of money that I might make from getting a higher percentage per book of book sales. So I really see it very personally as wanting to contribute something to the world that's going to be useful and helpful, and I'm hoping to many people for many years to come. A book can reach many, many people that I can't through the phone or through my website. And I have proof of that from having written the first book, where I still to this day, even though it came out in 2009, get messages from people all over the world just describing how helpful it was. And that really, really, really makes me feel good. But from a very pragmatic business perspective, it will be something that I can easily use then to leverage to create workshops, to create keynote talks, and also to be using the tools with new clients that I may be working with.
You know, I really couldn't agree with you more about the sort of the boost you get from a New York publisher. And interestingly, I had the same publisher, Penguin Portfolio, for my book, the corporate blogging book. And there is something just very special about that. But I hope that what I'm doing with Voxy Media is presenting this not as an either or, but as a both and, in the sense that people who are lesser known, it's very difficult to get the book contract. And so doing something short and sort of getting it out there, short but really good, is you know, a step. Like you would say, there's many steps and they all relate to each other. So, but I appreciate you saying that, because I think, I think it's in the back of everyone's head. And it's not that self-publishing means you should never go with the New York publisher, because I would never be the one to say that. Let me ask you, because this is something we spent some time on in the Beta Author program. How long does what I call the idea stage for a book take? That is, the coming up with a unique idea and the angle versus the actual writing. Because again, we're trying to compress a whole big thing into 8 weeks here. And I stress, you know, figuring out what the idea really is kind of important. So even though you feel like you want to get right to the writing, maybe stop and let's dig deeper to figure out what's really unique and compelling about your idea. But can you talk about a little bit about the idea versus the writing?
Definitely. Well, and I just wanted to address one quick thing about the last comment that you make. I could not agree more about a huge important step being creating something from start to finish that can be a smaller piece of work. It's one of the very best ways that you can just become familiar with the process and that you can begin to build more of a platform and fans and everything else that you're going to need if you choose to go the traditional publish route, because it's definitely not the only way to go. And there are so many reasons why having something that is a clear, well-produced, you know, book is really going to help you. So I just really want to underline that it is an and. It's not an either or. And one of the things that's typical for traditional publishing today is the expectation on the author is that you will pretty much do 99% of the marketing yourself. That is the reality, even in the big publishers. And so that's why you need to have that marketing engine behind you. But this is a fantastic step to do a smaller book. Yeah.
I didn't say that specifically, but that's a big, that's kind of what gets you the contract with New York or not, really.
Exactly. It's just, you know, getting your work out there and seeing how it happens. So that said, I will give the typical consulting answer, which is it depends. It really, really depends on what the idea for your book is. There are some people who have been doing work for a really long time. Maybe they have a core process that they want to get out there, or they've been ruminating on a story for a long time, and it's just a matter of getting it down on paper and making it clear, and then they can be off to the races to do it. For other people, I was on Twitter today, and I sent a message to Nancy Duarte, who's one of my heroes. I love her. She's written a number of books, including Slideology and Resonate. She's an amazing author and designs a lot of presentations for her agency in Silicon Valley. And we were having dinner. She's working on her new book, and she said that she had basically downloaded the entire internet and was like reviewing it for patterns in for her new book, because she was doing this really intense analysis about business today and archetypes of leaders and all of these really amazing things. So in the case where you're doing a book like Nancy, which is really based on huge research and you don't even really know the ideas that you're going for until you start to dig into it, that process can take years. And some people really do spend years looking at that. So a lot of it depends on, you know, the objective for why you're writing something and maybe a book that you do feel like you have in you, which might be more relevant for your beta authors, where this is a great place to start. It makes sense. You can really leverage the knowledge that you currently have in order to get something of great quality out the door. From that perspective, length does make a big difference because the process, I've had two experiences for the two books. And so the first book, I had initially like put together a general outline with an initial agent that I worked with and floated it by a couple publishers, and it really fell flat. I wasn't really feeling it. You know, I knew that I wanted to write a book, but I had kind of half-heartedly written the ideas, and it didn't really work. So then we spent the next year just stepping away from it. I just kept writing on the blog. It was after that period of time that Portfolio actually approached me about doing the book, and that's where the ideas really were more crystallized. And I think it's because I had been consciously tracking what was that process that I was using with clients so that I could really be including those in the book. So if you really take that total process, it was probably, you know, over a year that I was really working on the ideas, but some of that was just percolating and actually doing the experiential work. In the case of the latest book, when I really began to feel that I wanted to work on it and I got excited about this idea, body of work, it was a little bit longer for the process of getting the proposal together. The first one, I met my agent, and I took about 3 weeks to put the proposal together, and it just worked. We turned it in on a Friday, and we signed the deal on Tuesday, which is very unusual. But again, in this case, the publisher had approached me because they'd already been following my blog and were more confident in my writing. So with this latest book, my agent and I actually went through, I think, 6 different iterations where I sent her the first draft. She gave me feedback and sent it back. I sent it back to her. There was a lot more back and forth because a lot of this idea set is really a new one. I haven't been writing about these things every day. I haven't been coaching thousands of people for 7 years on these topics. And so she really helped me to clarify and hone it. We also sent it to the editor of my first book, who was involved with me in the process, and she gave some feedback. I had a meeting with the team from Portfolio, you know, where we reviewed it. They gave some feedback. So the process took a little bit longer, like maybe 3 months of going back and forth. So
now you said something about a draft, but are you really talking about your book proposal? Because that's what I was going to ask you.
The book proposal, yeah, this is the proposal. That's how I choose to do it. I know some people like to actually write the whole book before they approach the publisher. I don't. It's much easier for me to be sharing the idea for the book because when the publisher sometimes has a specific view about what would be a useful angle to take, or maybe is another book that I'm not even aware of that's coming out in the market that would really be a direct competitor where there's no new ideas. So for anybody down the road thinking about the traditional publishing route, I think that can be a really effective thing. Usually for a first book, they might require that you write a couple of the first chapters as sample chapters. In this case, because it was a second book, I didn't need to do that. But it just did take a while, you know, to do it. And we've had about 6 months or so. I have a little bit of flexibility in the timing, so most likely it's going to take 7 months as I'm getting into it. I think it may take a little bit more time, but what we're aiming is to be able to have it ready for release that is in the fall of next year. And my writing process, I know you asked that before about how it is that I might fit it in to everything else that's going on. I wish I could change this about myself. I'm 46 years old, and I would think by now that I would have this perfectly stretched out process where I just did a little writing every day. But it never seems to happen that way. What I notice is that I work in batches, and so when I have a lot of things going on the business side, which I have this fall, then it's easier sometimes.
Pam, are you there?
I'm okay. Here. Sorry, my headset just died. So,
I thought it was me. You're still there? Yeah.
I'm still here, yeah. So it's more of having a dedicated process where I know that as I get toward the book deadline, I'm more or less going to be writing full-time. And that's where I'm just making sure that my other business activities are going to be okay with that so that I don't have so much stuff going on during the times where I'm doing intensive writing. I love to write. The process of writing a full-length book is very grueling. There's parts of it that are just not fun that I'm not looking forward to, but the joy of having written a book is so great that I know it's worth it.
Well, I would agree with you there. And, you know, it's funny. I've been thinking about having like a mini book proposal process be part of the writing program that I do with up-and-coming business authors, just because even if they're expecting to self-publish, you cover a lot of ground in a book proposal, from kind of the why of the book to who the audience is, how you're going to market it, you know, possibly how you're going to organize it, that actually is really, really useful. So I know that in this time, I remember, it seems like you worked a lot on the book proposal. You worked quite a long time. You worked for quite a long time.
Yeah.
On that.
I think the book proposal process is a fantastic one for the reasons that you discussed, that sometimes as authors we get really wed to our ideas and sometimes a bit blind to other components, like is anybody else going to like our idea, or, you know, how is it positioned competitively in the market, and how are we going to get the word out? And it's similar to taking the time to do a business plan, where when you do that thinking, even though it can take a little bit of extra time up front, it can make the entire process moving forward so much easier. And I really do believe in having a clear idea and really basing a great book on the merit of the ideas themselves. That's really important. You want to make sure that you have a very, very high quality book. However, when you are a business owner and you're using a book as part of what you do in your business, you also do want to think about what are the components in there that are related to things that you might be doing on the business sense. And I think about Dan Pink, who is another person who I admire so much, who's so bright. And I notice when he's doing his decision making about books, and he's such a fantastic writer, and he always has such an interesting perspective. He also chooses topics that are really going to have a very broad appeal. So looking at something like Drive, which is all about motivation, and that's a core element that affects everybody within every kind of company. It's a really, really smart kind of idea to be sharing about. His latest book that's coming out right at the end of this year is about selling and a whole new way to look at selling. So it is important to be thinking about how the book is actually going to be used, and part of that is what it is that you're analyzing in your book proposal. Because when you think about it, there are certain advantages that you can really use when you're doing the book marketing, like if you know that you have certain kinds of business engagements. And I remember, Debbie, you were telling me that one of your authors had written a book that had to do with insurance. Is that right? That kind of a particular approach that he had to insurance?
Yeah.
So when you think about that and you think, wow, what if he's going and he's speaking at a whole number of conferences that are related to insurance, you know, maybe there's partners that could work with him that would buy a huge volume of books, you know, in order to give to their clients. Having companies buy books that they give to their clients or customer or their employees is often a really good way to move a big, you know, quantity of books. So all of these things end up being part of what you think about when you're doing your marketing plan. And if it can influence in a positive way without corrupting the beauty and purity, you know, of your ideas, but really influence making good choices about what's in your book so that you can have a better chance at selling it down the road, I think that's a really good thing to have.
And also, yeah, I think you said this, you know, both selling the book and also, in a sense, extracting from the book the business activities you want to engage in going forward, whether it's workshops or speeches. And, of course, Dan Pink, his books lend themselves perfectly to speaking to all different kinds of organizations. So thank you for saying that. I think it's so important.
Not by accident. I think that's the important thing. I think he really consciously thinks about that, which is one of the many reasons why I like him.
And, you know, I know Dan a little bit. He actually lives here in D.C., and I was talking with him on the phone just very briefly, probably a year ago, and I said, you know, what are you up to? And he said, well, I'm working on my next book, which was this book. And he said, it's hell. It's just, I'm having this one is so hard for me. So just for everyone listening, that's what these big-time business authors will admit, you know, and it just is true, sort of organizing and figuring out what you really want to say. Pam, tell us a little bit about what I'm going to call your methodology. So, for example, some of what you want to write about in body work is probably in your head. I'm going to call those like original ideas. But I know that you love to weave in, you know, stories, case studies, you know, based on interviewing people. And how do you, so as you go about working on the book in your batches of time, how do you allocate that, knowing that, oh, you know, I'm going to write about this topic, but I really need like five stories to go with it?
Yeah, so my process is that one thing I learned from the first book, it seems like the simplest thing in the world, but it actually was really pivotal. I went in the early stages of writing, I had been, you know, I had a document going where I was writing sequentially, where I'd start with the introduction and I was going through to fill in the information, the chapters. And one of the things I've now learned about myself is I do not have a sequential brain at all. I might get a total idea in the shower for one chapter, and then I'm, you know, listening to the radio and a song comes on and it totally reminds me of something else for another chapter. So at one point when I was actually very overwhelmed with the book and I felt like there is no way I'm ever going to finish it, it's totally impossible, and I was just looking at a bunch of blank pages, I went through my Word document and I took the table of contents, which I had because I had done that for the book proposal, and for each of the chapters I created section headers so that, you know, there actually be a link, and there was a style, for those of you who use Microsoft Word know what I'm talking about, where you could create a style for each of the headers for the chapters, so that I had all the chapters in it first. Many of them just had nothing in it, but at least I had the document divided into different sections. And then I went through and went to my blog, and I actually went to Elance, elance.com, which is a site where you can, you know, have different freelance projects. And I had somebody, it was amazing, he did it in 24 hours for $50. He indexed every single blog post that I had on my blog and just copied it into a Word document and organized it by title so that I could just click on the table of contents and be brought to that particular post. And then that's one source that I began to use to pull in certain content from my blog into my book, because it's a very appropriate and okay thing to do, to be leveraging writing that you've already shared in your blog. It's, you know, a common practice now, whereas in the past I think a lot of folks thought that you have to have everything totally new content when you're creating a book. So because I had that index in my Word document where I could just, you know, create the table of contents, which then also has hyperlinks, as I would be going through my blog post and say, oh, here's a great thing, I can pull this paragraph from that one post and put it in the chapter that has to do with XYZ, I could quickly click on that chapter and paste it right in there. And so that process began to really match more how it is that my brain worked. And then what ended up also feeling good is I began to have a document that actually had some meat on it. And it's much easier for me to be editing stuff that's already there rather than just looking at a blank page and, you know, and writing things. So that is a really important process that I've done. And so if I have a note or a thought about, you know, I keep that document in Dropbox so that in any kind of laptop that I'm using, no matter where I am, I have access to it and I can update it. And it's also backed up, which is very important. So as I have a random thought for a certain chapter, I usually put at the top of the chapter, ooh, you know, add an interview here, or I might put a link to a blog post that I wrote that I want to reference. And that's really the basic way that I operate. I've been trying to use Evernote more because a lot of my friends talk a lot about how Evernote's such a great tool. I think I just need to learn the tool a little bit more because I can see how it would be really effective when you can just, you know, note bookmark things from your phone and all of that. But I haven't figured out the technical side enough to really use it as a good tool.
I am so glad you said that about Evernote, because I'm having the same problem. Everyone recommends it and I'm still finding it confusing to use. And I actually do talk to my authors about using Word, but I didn't know enough about this style thing. So I've been saying, you know, set up different Word documents for each section and then just dump stuff into each of the sections. But this is, I'm going to have to research this. This is brilliant to have one Word document divided into the sections that you can click to. Because then you end up with literally, you know, you could look down at the bottom of that Word document and see, you know, word count, 10,000, 20,000.
Yes.
And it makes you feel so good. So I'm really glad you told me that. All right, now let's see. Okay, well, here's one of my favorite questions. So writers use, and you've talked a little bit about this, but they use all sorts of techniques, you know, from meditating to turning off the Internet, blocking the Internet, to getting out of the office and going to a coffee shop to write. tell me about any discoveries you've made that work for you in terms of sitting down and doing the actual writing. What are your tips and tricks or that really appeal to you?
Yeah, well, one thing I learned, I just recently spoke on a cruise, which is a great work gig where they paid me to go to the Caribbean for 5 days, and all I had to do is to do a talk for 3 hours during that time. So it was a wonderful way to disconnect from everything, and I actually ended up really diving into the book then and doing a lot of writing during that time, because it is hard for me if I'm just in, once I'm in the office, I have my assistant right in the office next door, and often I just get sucked into stuff that's going on at work and distracted by, you know, what I'm working on and don't really get into the book. So I do like the idea, and it's been effective for me in the past, to go to a different physical environment, like a cafe or, if possible, you know, a cruise to the Caribbean, which, of course, can't happen once a month, unfortunately. But part of what I think I'm going to work into my process this time is maybe going up to Sedona, which I'm in Arizona, so it's just a couple hours away. And in the month of January, where I know I'll be doing some intensive writing, just use that as a way to get away. So that is one thing that personally works well. The other thing I noticed when I was on the cruise is I didn't always want to bring my laptop out when we would do the day visits to the beaches, and so I just brought a yellow lined notepad and a pen. And I found that it was so much easier to be capturing thoughts when I was doing that. So what I would do is I would go out and just let all the ideas out and sometimes, you know, draw pictures and have, you know, different ideas for sidebars and stuff like that. And I would just write and write and write in my yellow notepad, and then I would get back on the ship and go to my laptop and then type in those notes and transfer them. And that became much more of an easier writing process rather than just sitting down at the laptop and trying to type. So that's something now that I'm carrying into the writing process, where if I get stuck, it's, you know, more expeditious if I just directly go and write in the book. But if I get stuck for any reason, then I'll pull out my yellow pad and just start to write notes, and that tends to turn it around right away.
Well, we definitely need to have a cruise about during which one can write a short book.
Yes.
I don't know. Exactly,
I think that should be your next offering.
Oh, God. That just sounds wonderful. And it also kind of makes sense. We will even figure out how long, how many ports it needs to go to and how long it needs. Maybe each port will be one subheading of the book or something. So you've answered this a little bit, but let me just ask you outright, because I think everyone struggles with this. What do you do about, well, I have a list of things here, but procrastination, fear, anxiety, writer's block. You know, you seem so sane. I mean, do you have these problems? Can you tell us a little bit about
it? Oh, my goodness. If you could only inhabit my brain, I absolutely have the problems. And I always have. It's something that is, you know, inherent to my process, often the way that I do my writing. And so, it's concerning. It's just sometimes it's part of the writer's journey. Not everybody has it. I think everybody can have a certain amount of fear and doubt that comes in. And so a couple things that I found have helped. One of them is the book Bird by Bird by Anne Lamott, which you might hopefully have already recommended, but I recommend it to everybody who is writing a book, because it's hilarious and it's totally accurate, and it immediately will name sometimes the crazy fears and thoughts that we have in our head when we're writing. And because she names it so much and just, you know, makes you laugh in the descriptions that she gives of her own writing, which is amazing and brilliant, then it immediately, I find, kind of calms my own fear and just, you know, lets me get started. One of the things that she I'll give the PG-13 version of what she says, but her whole chapter is about, you know, the S word first drafts, right? Like how you can write drafts that are just absolutely garbage. Like that's what you need to do. When you first start writing, you can just let your mind wander. And she described in that chapter having, you know, 7 pages of just total drivel. And then on page number 7, you have this one paragraph where all of a sudden some jewel jumps out. And that's actually really what the writing process is more like. So educating yourself about the writing process is really, really helpful. And I find the humor in that is really helpful. I actually kept that book by my side the entire time that I was writing. At that point, I didn't have an outside office, so I worked from home, and I would just take that book with me wherever I was going. So if I got stuck, I would just open it to a page and just feel better. The other book that I reference a lot is The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield, and that's more when I want to kick up my inner warrior and just stop whining and start moving and writing, where Stephen Pressfield, it comes from more that strong perspective, which I relate to based on my martial art background, where he just says, you know what, writing is a craft and it's a profession, and you have to just sit your butt down and you have to do it. Avoiding it, putting it off day after day, tends to really let the anxiety increase. And so any way that you can break things down into much smaller pieces. I remember when I was writing my book, my first book, my daughter was really little. She was 3 months old when I got my book deal. And so, you know, she was just a tiny baby, and all kinds of things were happening in the economy and my husband's business. And it was just a wild time. And I just felt very, very overwhelmed. And I honestly thought, there's just no way that I can do this. And so I called Martha Beck, who I've, you know, trained with as a coach and as a friend. And she, I just said, I just can't do this. It feels like I'm somewhere in a war, and I'm dodging bullets, and then I have to sit down under a palm tree and write a poem. Like, I'm just not feeling it. You know, I feel like there's, you know, tragedy all around me. I can't calm myself down. And so she recommended that I do what she calls a four-day win, which is breaking the writing down into tiny little bits. So setting a goal for something like writing for 15 minutes each day. So you would say, I'm just going to make myself write for 15 minutes. It can be total drivel. At the end of that, when you do complete it, then you give yourself some tiny little reward, you know, some little piece of chocolate or something else. So you do this for 4 days, and on the fourth day, when you've completed that entire sequence, then you can give yourself a little bit of a bigger reward. What happens, not surprisingly, is once I was able just to get in and start doing writing for 15 minutes, that very quickly turned into an hour, and then two, and three, and then I was just on a roll, and I, you know, ended up finishing the book. But it's really important to not do things like set 8 hours blocked off in your schedule in order to write. And that can be overwhelming, and you can just start to put it off. But rather to put a little tiny piece in there, you might block off 3 hours, you know, of time in order to be focusing on the writing, but set a personal goal, if you're feeling overwhelmed, to just write for a very short period of time. And then once you get rolling, then you can start to just build and spend more time doing it. But it's part of my journey, and I just learned to embrace that. And in many ways, when I am feeling just like totally overwhelmed and scared and out of control and like this will never happen, I just realized I'm on the right path, because I felt like this before and I survived and I wrote it and it worked well, and so I'm going to do it again and just, you know, get back on the horse the next day and move forward.
Oh, Pam, that's great, because I have told everyone about Bird by Bird, and actually I have to talk more about The War of Art. But this brings me to a perfect final question, which is easy, and then maybe we could just take a few minutes and have the listeners ask them questions. So far, would you say, now that you're an experienced author, is it easier or harder writing your second book?
It actually feels the same. It feels the same.
Okay.
I think there's a balance between knowing that I've done it before does help a little bit, but that sometimes is balanced in a negative way by being concerned that the second one won't be as good as the first one. Because it happened to work out so well. I mean, I was so excited that the first book did well. It won Best Small Business Book of 2009, and, you know, that was a huge, huge success for me as a first-time author. But it's like somebody having their first movie, you know, do really well, or have their first hit come out and be a number one hit. All of a sudden, then the second one becomes harder. And I mean, I would only love to have had the success that Elizabeth Gilbert had with Eat, Pray, Love, right? And we know that was a massive gazillion seller. But
yeah.
her TED Talk about creativity was so hysterical, because she mentions that whenever, after that raging success of the book, when she was telling people she was working on her second one, it actually wasn't the second book she ever wrote, but it was the book following Eat, Pray, Love, everybody would just look at her with pity, like, oh, you know, that must be so hard. You know, like, how awful to have to write a book that follows that one. You know, and she said, what do you mean? You know, it was like almost setting herself up for doom. So there's a little bit of that happens, but in general, what always keeps me going is thinking about the purpose of the book, which is to be of service, to help people get jobs and build a business and have a high quality of life. And whenever I start to get stuck in my own process, is where I kind of step back and slap myself like Cher did to Nicolas Cage in the movie Moonstruck and just be like, you know, snap out of it. It's not really about me. It's about helping people in the world who I care about. I know that I have things that will help them. And so stop whining and just get out there and do it. And that usually is enough to shake me into writing again.
Well, I am entirely confident that this next book will be just as good and intriguing and provocative, and just what you've said so far about the topic is just, it's just sort of the next step. It's so interesting, and it's something we all are waiting to hear. So I'm confident. So that's
I am so glad you're confident. I will lean on your confidence. I need
it. I'm gonna, let me switch to interactive mode. Now, everyone, there's only not that many people on the line. So does anyone want to jump in and ask Pam a question? I know she has another commitment at the top of the hour at 3 p.m., so we do have just a few minutes here. And introduce yourself if you do want to ask a question. I know you all are.
I have a question.
Yes.
And who is that?
It's Jeff.
Oh, good. Hi, Jeff. Okay.
And that is, do you start off with the overall structure and have the book pretty well figured out and outlined, or do you start and see where it goes?
I use the structured approach because within any particular chapter, then that's sometimes where I don't know exactly where it's going to go, but it personally can feel overwhelming to me if I don't know, you know, what's the overall objective of the book, what are the main messages, and then what are the ways that the chapters are organized and how do they fit together. So the book proposal really acts in that way for me. You know, I actually kind of start my actual book with pulling the outline that comes from the proposal and get going that way. But often the process of discovery is where I start writing and come up with analogies or ideas that I hadn't thought about at first.
You have a great question, and that is kind of a both and answer, I think. So, Pam, thank you for explaining that.
Thanks, Jeff.
Anybody else? I know that Joanne is there, and Rob.
I'm glad to ask a question. It's Rob.
Okay.
And Pam, I'm also a leadership coach, so I live in that same world. And one of the things I've been interested in but love your thoughts on are the idea of, When you write something, I'm going to write a book about governance because I think governance is challenged right now in our society, especially nonprofit boards.
Yeah.
And one of the things I just wanted to ask for your advice on is I'm inclined as I write it to be very, not coy, but to be very reluctant to give solutions and more interested in being generative and provocative in terms of getting people to those solutions based on the outcomes that they're seeking. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that, because there is also that tendency to say, well, let me just tell you how you do this. And I don't think that's a winner.
So I would say, you know, it really depends on what it is that you're trying to do with the book and how it is that you're using it. And actually, one of my former clients worked with Seth Godin at the Domino Project, if you guys know Seth. My client Willie Jackson was the chief technology officer, and he would tell stories about, you know, every day where Seth was kind of riffing about publishing and talking about different kinds of books. And one day he called me and he said, hey, we just kind of ripped apart your book, you know, and looked at it. And one of the things that Seth was saying is that sometimes a big idea book, which is I think more what you may be talking about, Rob, right, where you introduce, you know, provocative ideas, you get people thinking, that often those kind of big ideas books do sell more than those that are very prescriptive in how-to, right? Mm-hmm. That, you know, sometimes it can seem a little bit less interesting or less than a big idea, you know, if you just have a book that's getting people talking as opposed to how-to. However, it also really depends on who your audience is and what is the intention of the book. Because, for example, if you look at the audience, like, so who would the audience be for this book?
I would think the audience would be people who are serving on boards. I'm particularly interested in CEOs who work in close collaboration with what I would call chief voluntary officers, like board presidents.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So in that case, sometimes for that audience, CEOs by nature tend to be, you know, not have a lot of time, want kind of quick information, do get inspired by ideas, and then will pass it on to their staff and be like, hey, figure this out. Mm-hmm. So if that's the audience, it could be a good fit. sometimes I think it is useful where you have done things that have really worked well, then that's where the way in which you're doing it wouldn't necessarily have to be prescriptive, but you could maybe give certain examples where you have a case study or an example of, you know, here was a situation, here's this big idea, here's how it's actually applied. You know, here's some examples of how you can take this particular concept and do something with it so that people can understand what the application is, because otherwise some people can feel frustrated by it, you know, and that goes to the purpose of the book. What are you really trying to do? If you're just using it as a way to stimulate a conversation, which then you're going to pick up as you have speaking engagements or maybe as a way to open the door for you to do more consulting, then maybe you don't want to give all of the specific how-tos. But if you want to reach an audience that has some of the application parts, then that's where you might want to include a little bit of the how-tos. That's the approach I've always taken with my books, is a combination of both, and that's okay. Really what my publisher and I talked about for this one. But that's because for many people, they may never work with me, right? They just want to be able to get those tools. So I think that's one way to look at it. The other thing would be where you could have a companion book where you might have the big idea book that's really just provocative and opening people's minds, but then you have some kind of a companion book that, of course, you can sell, you know, in a package or as a follow-up that might have some more specific recommendations or recipes. And knowing how strapped for time people are in organizations and how they want to take an idea and apply it, if you can help them do it, that could be a value to them as well. But that may end up being a separate thing.
Super. Thank you very much. Thanks.
Sure.
We have time, I think, for one more question. Quick question. See if anyone... Okay. I think there's a couple of people on the line who are feeling a little shy. Pam, they're probably just overwhelmed.
That's
by
okay. No, it's totally great. Sometimes I have to step back and think about it, too, before I really formulate a question. So certainly encourage folks to follow up and post a question on my Facebook page or something like that.
Well, I will be sure to give everyone all your links, and I just want to say that was wonderful. Absolutely wonderful, provocative, informative. Pam, thank you so very, very much from all of us. And
well, thank you. Anything for you, Debbie. I'm totally happy to support your work, and I'm excited to see all the great books that will come out of this course.
Wonderful. Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye.